So now let us look at the different types of attacks. So having seen the different attacks, the phishing attacks and so on, let us look at if I have to broadly categorize these attacks into two different types of attacks. So one is an active attack. So active attack is the one where the hacker hacks an entire session. So he takes over the session on its own. So say he would actually control your user behavior. So he's fooling the server to think that the hacker is actually a legitimate user and manipulates into serving that information. So it involves a denial of service on the legitimate client. The next attack is a passive attack. So it focuses on monitoring the traffic between the victim and the server. So say something like a man in the middle, right? A man in the middle, and it could be of two forms. It could be either active, where he is actually taking over your session, or probably he has just installed a packet sniffer and he just sees all the communication that is happening. So it uses a sniffer to capture and monitor the traffic. The passive attacker doesn't tamper with the session which is in place, but then it is getting that information and setting it up for the future use. So say something like a struct next, right? So on day one, on the active session, you would not see any difference as such. But then over a period of time, it is then sending or relaying that information to the mastermind and slowly making those changes. So that is a passive attack. Now we would see the role of cookies. Now cookies are really important in case of a cyber crime. So cookies are basically the messages that web servers passes on to the browsers when you visit any internet site. So you would see temporary internet files in your local machine when you visit the internet. And the browser stores this in the form of a small file, so that is called as a cookie.txt. Now cookie has got all the information about what sites have you visited, what is the information that you've accessed, what time, and so on. So if you see the kind of ads that you receive basis your Google search, it uses cookies. Now and there are obviously sophisticated forms of it, but then yes, cookie happens to be the most basic form, because as I said, whatever you browse on the internet, it gets stored on a machine as a cookie. So unless you delete that information is still there, and if there is a program written to exploit that or take that data out from the cookie, then probably you have the entire browsing history. So when you request another page from the server, your browser sends the cookie back to the server. These files typically contain information about your visit to the web page, as well as any information that you volunteered to share, such as your name, your phone number, interests, and so on. Without the inclusion of cookies, it would be next to impossible to create applications that rely on the ability to maintain the state information across stateless protocols. Now, what does this mean? So, cookies also help to store the session state. So, for protocols like HTTP, these are stateless in nature. So, what happens is, suppose as a user I log on to a website, then the details of this particular session, so user creates a session for itself, as you would have seen in the OSI models. So there is a session layer. So the user creates a session, and this particular session is stored in the cookie, so that the application knows that a user with a X username and X password has signed in. So he's not redirected to another server the moment there is the server fails, right? So cookies basically help to store the session information also. And cookies are necessary for the function of for the functioning of a lot of web applications. So I told you how they are used to store the session information. And so there are basically two types of cookies. One is an application-based cookie, or one is a load balancer-based cookie. But you just need to understand this at a high level. So cookies are something that store the information, store the user information, and they should be deleted when it's not in use. So let us now understand what is the role of cookies in case of a cyber crime. So cookies are one of the most commonly used methods by malicious hackers to attack a computer, and therefore for an attacker, the cookie is the most convenient place of software to get that information, because it contains information about your particular usage and your session data. So it becomes easy for the attacker to get the session data your interest, your phone numbers and stuff like that if you've entered that. So attacks such as cross-site scripting or sniffing can easily capture the cookie information. So HTTP was never designed to maintain the session state, and that is why you cannot track the session information across multiple requests. And therefore, as I said, application-based cookie is more relevant in this case. So the user behavior is actually stored in application rather than a cookie, which is stored locally. So therefore, an application running over a stateless protocol. So because HTTP is stateless, it does not maintain the user state. It needs a cookie to maintain and track the user information. So cookies, it can be a source of the user information, and attackers basically use the cross-site scripting techniques to get the information out of the cookie and use it for their benefits. So again, one more important point. For people who are using the laptops or your browsers, periodically you should ensure that you delete the temporary internet files and the cookies so that this particular behavior cannot be exploited. Just a passing reference to Google, right? So Google basically looks at your cookies to provide you the ads that you see in your browser. So say for example, you've browsed for say holiday in Switzerland, right? After a time, even if you visit Facebook or if you use Insta or Instagram, right, you would see ads popping up about Switzerland hotels, holiday in Switzerland and stuff like that. So how does it happen? It happens through these cookies. So if you've deleted the cookies, then probably you will not be seeing those ads. Next is we'll talk about ID hacking. So what exactly is ID hacking? So hacking is an act committed by an intruder by accessing your computer without your permission. So hackers are people, they do hacking, basically they are computer programmers and they are not normal individuals. So they have a lot of technical knowledge, excellent knowledge of computers, excellent knowledge about networks, excellent knowledge about how applications can be exploited to get information. And as I said, so they are usually technology buffs who have expert skills into softwares, networks, programming languages, and they misuse this knowledge for a variety of reasons. So there are two categories of hackers. So one is a black hat crackers and one is the white hat hackers. So what are the black hat? So black hat hackers, they try and modify your system so that they can execute tasks at their own wish. So a hacker can display say a destructive message and they'll display it on your system. So these are the black hat hackers. The white hat ones, so they basically just want to establish their superiority. So they would want to, you know, establish saying that they are more technically sound and they have deep understanding of say the systems around. So these are the people who are only interested in the computer hacking as a intellectual job. So they don't use it for monetary gains. But then as I mentioned in the beginning, there could be different motives behind hacking, right? So people just want to establish their technical supremacy over others. So these are the white hat hackers. So some of the commonly used cybercrime techniques. So stealing user ID and password, and there could be a variety of different tools available. It could be network intrusions, social engineering. We spoke at length about the different kind of social engineering attacks. It could be say phishing attacks or you know any other. Posting illegal material, there could be a cyber fraud. Things like software piracy. Now this is really huge. What happens is you download a software which is a pirated software by its own nature, and you would see that it's functioning well, but then it could have a embedded exe, or it could have a embedded virus or a worm which is attached to that, right? And it could be self replicating. So this is a big market. So you see a lot of pirated software, but then in the back end, there could be a lot of viruses that could spread because of you doing that. There's dumpster diving, malicious code. We said that code could be explored. There could be some places where code is mishandled to see. I took an example of the application code where the word salary was written. It could probably trigger in another logic, which is a logic bomb. So it's again part of a malicious code. Data deedling, I spoke about. Embezzlement, this denial of service, this distributed denial of service, denial of device. So there could be things like, you know, this particular device, and it could be a ransomware in its own nature, right? So denial of the device gets logged and so on. So these are some of the common attacks that could take place. Apart from that, there could be others such as SQL injection I spoke about, which explores the application vulnerability, ransomware, cross-site scripting, as I said. There could be virus dissemination. So once there is a virus attached to a program, it could then spread to other machines. The other forms are worms, Trojan horses we spoke about, phishing. Phishing attacks, so I took an example of the ICICI Bank email phishing attack. There could be email bombing, so these are, say, emailers that are meant for the mass market, so it's basically spamming. I spoke about webjacking, so where intruders hijack different websites, and salami slicing. So salami slicing is really classic because it absolutely goes undetected, right? So just imagine a situation. Right, someone is stealing, like, say, for example, 2 rupees or 5 rupees or say 20 rupees from your account. You would not really bother, right? But then look at the magnitude of that attack. If the attacker is actually, say, targeting, say, 5,000 users, people would generally don't mind, say, 2 rupees or 5 rupees, 20 rupees, as I said. But then if it happens, say, once in a quarter, then these kind of attacks absolutely go unnoticed, correct? So that's. And these attacks are evolving by the day. So salami slicing was not very prominent probably, say, 5 years back. Then these are the new nature of attacks that the attackers are getting into. So having seen the different types of attacks, let us understand the psychology of a cybercrime, right? So basically there are two types of computer crime situations that investigators are confronted with. So first is where a network incident occurs. So that is a attacker is not previously known entity, but then he somehow managed to get inside the network. And the, another situation is where both the crime and the attacker are highly known. So say, for example, something like a financial fraud or someone who is exploiting a day zero kind of attack. So in this case, it's the attacker or basically the motive behind that attack is known. So these are the two I should say situations how attack occurs. In both the cases, the cybercrime analysts use a method called as deductive profiling, using a psychological profiling of the unknown offender, and narrows it down to a group of suspects, and then follows it up with the investigation department. So this is the entire mindset behind a cyber attack, right? So if you have any complaints, you go to a cyber cell, and they would then, you know, ask you several questions. They will probably see logs from your computers, they would see the cookies, and then they would, you know, start their investigation. They would look at which is the public IP that you've got from the service provider. They would ask the service provider to open up their particular logs so that they could see that where that information is going, where the attacker of that information was. So what is the source IP, what is the destination IP. So these are all the things that come into picture when you are actually, you know, investigating a cyber attack as such. So below are a few characteristics of most of the cyber criminals. So we saw who are the different types of cyber criminals, so and different types of situations. So below are, as I said, so most hackers have the combination of excellent technical skills and the intelligence. Typically they are the people who have disrespect for the legal norm, and they feel that, you know, law is outside their reach, and they cannot, you know, the law agencies cannot take them in their own control. So they are kind of they want to break free kind of behavior, but then it's not really meant for the society as such. So they are motivated for various reasons. As I said, some could be for monetary reasons, some could be just to get that fame, that attention. It could be for political motives. You know, you see a lot of cyber warfare even during the time of elections. So I remember this case where the BJP website was hacked and it was brought down. I don't know by whom, but then so you see a lot of political motives also behind the cyber warfare. So the cyber criminals, they have higher than average IQ, having analytical and technical skills. They are addicted to the internet. They are they basically are born out of say a bad education system, or so they fall out from the office, they fall out from the college. So probably they have disrespect for the society as such. They are rebels, as it is mentioned, against all systems, symbols and authorities. So having seen the different attacks, having seen the psychology of the cyber criminals, let us look at the ways and methods how a cyber attack can be stopped. And this is very key for everyone, right? For individuals like you and me, but also for you who guys are going to be future CEOs, CFOs, CISOs of multinational organizations, big companies. Some of you might start your own ventures. So it becomes all the more important for you to, you know, ensure that these systems are in place so that you are not one of those victims of those attackers. So let us look at these techniques. So a few steps could be taken to ensure that the data are secure. So one is to have a right strategy in place. So it could be a data strategy, it could be a people strategy, it could be a process strategy. So remember the three pillars of data security that we spoke about. So ensure that your corporate strategy is devised around those for having a necessary secure IT system in place. So have a right people, process and a technology strategy. Ensure that you have a secure hardware. It could be a part of your technology strategy to ensure that you have the best of the breed of the firewalls, best of the breed of IPS, other security mechanisms in place. Identify which is your key data, and this is very important, right? So there are IT resources such as data theft prevention, or say something like a data DLP system, so data leak prevention systems in place. So for them, what is really important is to categorize which is important data and which is not. So very quickly, a DLP system or a data leak prevention or a data loss prevention system is a IT system or a solution which categorizes what is data is important to you, what is not, and then it has different mechanisms to stop the flow of data. So say if a user wants to upload a picture, and if that picture is critical to the organization, it will not allow to upload it. Or say a email to external domain would not be allowed, only to the company domain would be allowed. There could be physical securities in place. Say for example, any USB sticks to the laptop might not be allowed. Things like doing a print screen might not be allowed. Converting a file, so there could be a simple policy in place that there could not be any file uploads of a Excel file. So say a .xls file cannot be sent over email to a private email ID. So say for example, I cannot email Excel file to Google or gmail.com. So what if a user renames that Excel file as say abc.xls to abc.jpg, but then the system, the DLP system, is still intelligent enough to look at the content of that file and figure out that this is the behavior that the data has, and then still prevent. So it's very key to identify what is your essential data and then have the DLP systems in place. Have a proper encryption and a backup policy in place. Ensure that your wireless networks are encrypted so that you don't face man-in-the-middle attacks or any wireless rogue AP attacks or wireless intrusion prevention attacks. ensure that the network admin rights are given only to the people who do that job and not to everyone. So as I said, there is a principle of giving the least privileges to users, only basis the roles and responsibilities. Others would include things like having a proper antivirus in place. I mean, that's the basic hygiene of every corporate environment. Ensure that there are regular patch updates. So this is very critical to see that there are no vulnerabilities in the existing systems. So as to avoid a day zero attack, or not a day zero attack as such, because day zero attack would not actually know what is a vulnerability. But then if there is a patch provided by the company to stop that vulnerability or put a gap to that or patch that vulnerability, so ensure that those patches are in place. In case of a firewall, ensure that all the ports are blocked apart from the ones that are required. So a firewall should have a very stringent audit in place, where only say well-known port numbers are allowed, but then other ports are blocked so that attackers cannot get in. Ensure that the accounts are configured to reduce the impact of an attack. So ensure that the accounts are segregated to reduce that impact. Check for obvious signs of phishing, right? And I'm repeatedly saying that because phishing is a very common form of attack which everyone encounters. So ensure that if you are facing a phishing attack, then you report it. Then there could be other things like incident management. So ensure that if there is attack in place, then there are proper procedures to mitigate that. Ensure that there are proper forums for people to raise their voice if there has been an attack of any sort. Keep up with the attackers. I mean, it's absolutely impossible, although I've written it, but it's impossible. But then some of the attacks would be of a repetitive nature, right? So say something like a phishing attack, which is very common, something like a malware or a Trojan or a virus. So this needs a lot of education amongst the people, a lot of awareness among the people to ensure that they don't become victim of such kind of attacks. So ensure that employee education in place. Avoidance strategies and dissemination to the staff. So again, basis the roles and responsibility, ensure that the information is given only to the people who need it, and it's not made universally available. Ensure that your passwords and all are not shared. Ensure that you have multi-factor authentication in your accounts. So multi-factor authentication is so two-factor is a common form of a multi-factor authentication. So what happens is, the moment you log in with your username and password, it sends authentication on your mobile device, if you have mentioned that. So that's a two-factor authentication. So you've entered the username password, so that is one form. Second is in the form of OTP that is given to you, which is generated on the fly. So that's the second form. But you could have a multi-factor authentication in place, and there are so many tools and companies available who engage into doing that. Invest heavily into cybersecurity insurance. Ensure that the people are aware, you have the right blend of technology, and very importantly, it is the right mindset that has to be developed to encounter a cyber attack, right? So ensure that you are not a victim, you don't do the work of cleaning up after the attack has happened, but rather than be more secure so that you don't become a victim of the attack.